Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 14th, 2002. We're in the Fireside Room this evening, and our presenters are Diane Shiner, Janet Grant, Christopher Gilgi, and Molly Archer. Today's session number is SHD 2002-01. The title of our session this evening is Vision for Holden. Let's listen in.
Welcome, everybody. You are sort of the stalwart souls. Friday night, I know we must be very tired, and it's a hot evening, and yet all the work that you've been doing all week is sort of putting your body on the line for the future of Holden. I'm sorry, am I not loving it?
No, it's exercise.
It's exercise. But truly investing, even though we know that paint jobs don't last forever, and even beautiful porch steps and decks and so on eventually fall apart, but nevertheless, everything that we've been doing has had some investment in ensuring that our future will be that we'll be around for the next generations and in good health in terms of our facilities. What I'd like to do, I think most of you, as I look around, do know us, but you may be among those who wonder, what do they do? So I thought that we would start with just a brief introduction of each of our roles in the village. We are the management team of the village, people who have made a longer-term commitment to care for this place, and all of us feel very called to this mission. I think, for myself, that we have been enjoying for 2 years now really an extraordinary and deep sense of collegial trust and interdependence. We have fairly clear ideas of what we each, sort of what we each do. We're very intertwined in the way these all contribute to the life of the village. My name is Diane Shiner, just finishing the second year of the five-year commitment that Janet and I have made together as co-directors. And when Janet and I first got together to sort of discuss what we would propose, how we would share this position, we thought about some of our talents and experience and think of ourselves as somewhat joined at the heart in our love of this place, but that I turn a little bit more toward the outside. And some of the things that are kind of in my in-basket include things like our public relations, our publication materials, the newspaper, our fundraising, our contracts, some of our work with the Forest Service and the mine remediation, kind of overseeing some of the infrastructure pieces and going out to Holden circles and things like that. It isn't that Janet doesn't also do those things, but I lean a little bit in that direction in terms of the things that I pay a special attention to. And Christopher, what do you do?
One of the things I like about my job is that I do a wide variety of things. Operations is perhaps the moving parts of Holden, the physical part of Holden, the buildings, the grounds, the road, the vehicles, the fire brigade, all the remodeling programs that we work on, the firewood gathering, the transportation, dealing with building permits and outside agencies regarding inspections of our fire systems and many other things in the village. The operations staff do the kind of work that most of you are doing this week: painting, remodeling, plumbing, electrical, brush clearing, you know, all those things. So I try to line up projects, and supervise the people that are working in operations, and look ahead to the projects that we want to do in 2 or 3, 4 or 10 years away, and what has to happen in order to make those come about. And I code meetings.
That's our real job. Meetings, not constantly, not even terribly often compared to some environments I've been in. I'm Molly, and I'm the business manager, and I oversee the food service operations, housekeeping, downlink operations, the bookstore, bookkeeping, a lot of the pieces of the village that have to do with money and that have to do with some of the guest services. Generally, I found that the staff that we have are very responsible in taking care of their areas for themselves and don't need a lot of, you know, covering over their shoulders to get things done, but I'm kind of there to give them support and feedback and input when they need that. And then I also obviously look over our financial affairs for the village, keep track of the books, and look at our budget, make sure that we're in good, sound financial condition, which I'm happy to report the village is in very sound condition at this time. I feel very blessed in terms of not having to deal with lean times right now in the village, but at the same time wanting to be part of good stewardship of the gifts that the village has received and how those gifts are used.
I'm Janet Grant. Last weekend was the anniversary of my 8th anniversary of living here in the village. In my second term, 5 years serving on a team with Susan Brill and Martin Wells, and now into a 5-year term with Diane. As Diane leans more out, I lean more in. My responsibilities are more within the village. I work with very closely with our staffing people, our program, and our worship life. And I like to think that my umbrella is called community building. And so my life here in the village is really focused here, right here in the valley, with the people that with whom we live and work. With the people who come here to visit for short periods of time or longer periods of time as well. Not that, again, that Diane doesn't care about those things as well, but that we have kind of separated things in those ways. She's more out, I'm more in, and it seems to be working pretty well. Kind of a productive tension that we have. I had a postcard one time that says, "Don't take my tension away, it's the only thing holding me up." So, kind of... Hopefully it's holding things together.
One of the things that is a gift of having a strong team is that you all know what it's like when you're just barely, you know, keeping your head above water. But when you do feel that you're swimming, sort of synchronized swimming, something like that, then you get to plan wonderful things like working, because you have the energy and the support to do that. And one of the really big things that has been happening over the last year and a half is that with strong leadership from our board, we have been looking to the future. Where are we headed? When we began our conversations about how should we celebrate our 40th anniversary, we called a key group of people who have loved Holden for a long, long time together in Seattle. And that meeting happened to be the last time that I saw Elmer Witt. Elmer was at that meeting, and as we were going around the table, people were quite nostalgic about whatever era they had been a part of and what some of the strengths were and some of the fun memories and so on. And when it came around to Elmer, he more or less said something to the effect of he was tired of talking about the past. And that wasn't the way this place started. As some of you know, Elmer was one of the visionaries that contributed to the beginnings of this place and its direction. And that ability to look forward, even though he had a long history with this place in many ways, was certainly one of his gifts. And so he was one of the voices that kind of started really directing us into having this anniversary not just be 40 years back, but looking ahead, if not 40 years, then maybe 10. So we're going to do a little presentation, kind of taking that picture. Janet is going to talk a little bit about the visioning process that was originated by our board, what has happened so far, and some of our hopes in terms of programmatic emphasis. Christopher will then move into some facilities futures, which came to be called the Dream Team this winter in terms of some plans that we have over the next 10 years. And then Molly will talk about our endowment, some of our hopes for its growth, and how that will contribute to the support of facility upkeep and program improvement. And then I will close with some conversation about some plans, other plans that we have. And hopefully that won't take more than about 20 minutes or so, and we will then open it up for some questions and thoughts and concerns, ideas that you may have, because all along this has been a dialogue.
As Diane mentioned, about a year and a half ago, the board met at a special meeting in Seattle to do some initial steps towards a visioning. And they worked together for a couple of very intense days. And several goals came out of that meeting, all of which, as you might guess, were fairly big and broad and probably not too surprising to most of you or to us. But we then came home with a charge of taking and doing something with those. And we spent the better share of that winter than taking 10, was it 10?
10.
10 goals. And we narrowed that down into four goals that, in fact, 1, 2, 3, 4, we each kind of ended up kind of working significantly with. And I got to work with the program, which was a great joy for me, even though it was very hard work. I think it's some of the hardest work I've done. But again, as Diane said, it was collegial work. We gave each other good feedback, challenged one another on some of the things that we were saying and thinking, and came up with four strategies that are guiding the next 5 years for us. Basically, Diane and my term, these two, we are hoping they're here through all of that, too. We'll let them talk about that later. So basically, these four strategies are carrying us through, and each one of the strategies has four to six sub-goals underneath them that we're working on and then reviewing constantly. Let me just jump ahead then, too. This last fall, the board sanctioned a feasibility study to be made, and that was done, and maybe some of you were a part of that, I'm not sure. They interviewed a number of people, and one of the main things those people found in the feasibility study was that our constituents really want assurance that the program is going to be going to continue to be vital, it's going to be creative, it's going to challenge not only future generations of our family, but also the people we encourage to come here and ourselves. And so we have, I'm going to talk to you about what we want to propose, some of the things we want to propose that we're moving towards in that area, in the area of program. The particular strategy uses these words, offer challenging and practical resources for living faithfully. And then within that, we hope that we would be able to provide in more creative ways resources for the church that are transportable, that can be taken away from this valley, that can be tried out here, whether you're here for a day or a week or a year or 5 years, that there are things that we can take away from the valley, that there are new, and within that, especially new worship resources for the church, and that we provide new challenges for the church in liturgy and song and those sorts of things. We also have a goal of providing a center for discernment. And I think Holden has been for many, many years a place where people come to take time out to kind of figure out what's next, but to do a concerted effort with discernment, and especially through spiritual direction. And then also, We also want to make sure that Holden is made available to a wider diversity of people so that our community is broadened and strengthened and much richer for it. We see that our greatest asset is our volunteers. And that is a primary program for us in many ways, that we care for and tend to those who come to this valley to volunteer, no matter how long it is that they're here. And my work with working with the staff coordinators is directly related to that. I'm going to just run through quickly a few things that we are already doing or planning to do. We're trying to look at how more people might come on sabbatical here in a variety of ways. We've kind of made some changes in those requirements to come on sabbatical. We're making things more youth-friendly. In 2003, next summer, we'll be hosting a group of young writers who have been a part of, many of you probably are aware of Practicing Our Faith, a book that was written, edited by Dorothy Bass about, 4 or 5 years ago now. She has now been part of a project where youth have written, youth-oriented Practicing Our Faith. And those writers will be coming to Holden next summer to share some of their writings, to talk with one another and with other youth about what does it mean to practice your faith as a young person these days. And I don't know if you're aware of our Narnia and Minors and Junior Minors curriculum. This is the first year that all three of those curricula have been integrated with one another and with the overall theme for the summer. So we're constantly kind of moving with that the curricula for those three programs. Music, arts, and worship are prime in our goals here, and we are blessed to have a wonderful pastor with us these days. Ben and his family will stay with us for another year, and he's very creative. I don't know how many of you were at the session before or during Second Supper. I got to sit in on part of it. But he is going to be a leader in the church. He already is, and we are blessed to have him. He's very creative in the liturgies and the work he does in the community and things we're trying out, especially through the winter community, that he then helps us carry through into the summer community. Kristen Gilla is our artist in residence, Christopher's spouse, and they've been with us for 5 years, and you see the beauty of the artwork that she has already brought to our community in a variety of places. I hope you're noticing it in the dining hall, the bookstore, and our worship space. And giving leadership right there, right, all around us, and challenges us to be community as she creates that work. We work with her to create this artwork, even though God works through her paintbrush and thoughtfulness and creativity. Crafts is another area that people just don't get enough of, and so we're really hoping to move ahead in those areas. To help people find forms of expression through crafts, through arts, through music. We've always, I think, had a strong music connection, and we want to continue that as well. Spiritual direction is a pilot program we started last summer. Throughout the summer, we had a spiritual director in the village providing one-on-one direction, walking with people in their spirit life and the life that they in their walk with God. That pilot program was such a success for us that it was no question to us that we would continue it. And in fact, have had a spiritual director here this past month. A new person will be coming next Saturday. We'll have spiritual directors with us throughout the summer who will provide teaching sessions about what spiritual direction is, as well as offering one-on-one and group opportunities for people to talk and walk together, the two of them, or if it's a group, in the walk with how God wants us to live in our lives and what God wants us to do. Hospitality, then, is, I think, another piece of our program here, and that relates to the diversity. I want to share with you some successes we've had and some challenges we faced. We have made a commitment the last several years. This summer will be the third year, in which we are offering scholarship money, outreach to people who are part of communities that would not necessarily make it to Holden. And 2 years ago, in 2000, we were able to offer that opportunity to one group. Last year, we had of about 10 or 12 people. Last year, we had four groups. This year, we'll have five groups coming throughout the summer. And these are folks who come from all over. One group that's come all 3 years is a group called Genesis House from Chicago, Illinois, which is a group of women who are recovering prostitutes. And they bring a richness to our community that it's hard to explain. They have a deep experience being part of the life here in the village, but I think even deeper is the rest of the community from their presence with us and the stories they are so willing to share with us of their lives. The other groups, we've been welcoming a number of Honduran farm workers from north of Seattle each of the last several years as well, and other groups as well. So I've kind of taken up my time, but I want to say that that's an area that we have a strong commitment and for growth. We also have been providing encouragement through scholarship funding and program support to our May Youth Weekends to bring young people to the village from different communities. So this spring was our first time. We brought in about 850 people during the May Youth Weekends. 13 of those people came from the Hilltop area in Tacoma. We're hoping that next year or in the next couple of years that number will be up to at least 50. This year was a start on that. So I'll let Christopher tell you some more things that relate to that, the next step.
About half the budget for the upcoming capital campaign is for capital improvements, which we hope to accomplish in the village over the next 10 years. And about half of that money is going into remodeling and construction projects. Similar to Lodge One, which many of you have been in and have helped work on this week. But ultimately, all the capital improvements are program-based. They're meant to either enhance program or to preserve the spaces which we have for program and our ultimate mission. The village is old. Preservation of our buildings is a big part of the reason for these remodels. The plumbing in many of the buildings is barely working. The structures have been through 60 years of having their snow load exceeded. There's some rot. The siding is poor. The windows are falling apart. So preserving what we have is one big reason. And increasing energy efficiency. We burn a tremendous amount of firewood and diesel fuel here, way more than we would have to. As we remodel each building, we reduce dramatically the fuel that is needed. So the village is less dependent on burning fuel and creating greenhouse gases and also the tremendous amount of volunteer labor that goes into producing that firewood. And we're increasing safety. With each remodel, we're enhancing and expanding the fire sprinkler systems. We'll be adding fire sprinkler systems to the chalets as we go through those. Lodge 1 and all future remodels have fire-rated building assemblies. We have fire doors on the rooms. We have fire-rated sheetrock on the walls. We have fire blocking in the stud cavities. We're replacing the fire alarm systems with improved fire alarm systems, smoke detectors in every room now, and the wiring itself has become a hazard in certain cases, and we're putting all new wiring in the buildings. And also, hospitality is a big reason for these remodels. The rooms are going to be more inviting. They'll be less drafty. They'll have less mice. And they'll... Lodge 1 on the first floor, we have bathrooms now, which are completely ADA compliant. You can use Lodge 1 in a wheelchair much better than anywhere else in the village. And we have more community spaces for gathering together, and such as we have on the second floor of Lodge 1. Some of the projects that we'll be doing. Next winter, we're going to remodel Lodge 6 and Chalet 6. And many of you may come and end up working on those projects. In fact, I hope many of you do. Starting in September, we'll be recruiting work groups from congregations as well as individuals. particularly are looking for plumbers and electricians to come and work on those two remodels. And a year from now, we expect to start construction of Chalet 2, which we are currently working on design and working on the permitting process, which is a long, involved process for a new building here. And we hope many of you will come to work on Chalet 2 a year from now. After that, we hope to remodel Koinonia, and that's a three-phase project. The first phase is to take the upper west ring, where there are now guest beds. Those guest beds will have been replaced by beds in Chalet 2 and create additional program space in Koinonia, where Koinonia will become 100% program. Our expectation for upstairs is to create another creekside room, another programmatic room, another classroom, as well as some additional office and conference rooms. The next phase of the Koinonia project is the lower west ring, where we will move the libraries out, we'll take all the walls out, we'll put in ADA bathrooms, and the whole additional space will become a craft room with much more natural light.
How do you plan to make the second floor accessible?
The second floor won't be any more accessible than it is right now unless we add an elevator or one of those little carts that runs on stairs. Both of the things that we're considering. However, as much as we try to make Holden Village accessible, we know that it will never be 100% accessible. This entire floor, the craft room, the worship space, the creekside room, and the new bathrooms will be accessible. Whether the upstairs is accessible to a wheelchair or not is unknown at this point.
I guess I was a little surprised to see program space being created in a non-accessible place.
It's about the only place to put it.
I hear you.
We'll be adding 1,600 square feet of program space. There is simply no other street-level place for that.
And where did the library go?
Phase three is the remodel of the Koinonia addition basement, the daylight basement where the craft room is now. We are going to add a radiant heated floor, pour another concrete slab on top of the one that's there with hot water heat in it, and create a library system down there. A combined libraries with resource rooms and computer carrels, and the two libraries up here will move down there.
That will be accessible from the outside, though.
It will be accessible in the same way the craft room is now, which is accessible in the summer, but not in the winter, as far as wheelchairs go. So we already have program space that's not wheelchair accessible. Unless, again,
they come when they're old.
And then we hope to continue to remodel the chalets until we remodel all the chalets. And some years we'll be able to do two remodels like we expect to do next year, and other years we'll only do one. So the chalets will fit them in as we're able. We're going to build a contemplative space, a small chapel in the village. We're going to take the Narnia playfield and put in a basketball court and a picnic area and a grassy lawn to play on. We're going to build a small horseshoes, telephone. We're going to build a small warehouse for storage of vehicles and lumber. And this summer, we're soliciting bids from log home contractors to replace and repair all the log corbels in the village, all the log ends on all the buildings in the village. We also put a significant amount of money into our utility system. The entire water distribution system is original to 1937, and that needs to be replaced, and that's part of the next campaign budget. Our power distribution system, much of it we hope to put underground. We need new backup generators, and our generators themselves need some more work. We need a new vehicle bridge, we need more buses, other vehicles. Continually we need to buy laundry equipment, and hot water heaters, and those sort of things. How fast we get this done is dependent upon staff. The biggest single thing is staff. the success of the capital campaign, and the impact to the village of the mine remediation. So some years will go quite fast, other years it may go slower, but we expect to continue moving forward. Larry?
Where does the septic system come in on?
The septic system project is about 50% complete. We expect to complete the other 50% this summer. We're on schedule for doing that.
Is that septic system organic, or is it changed to like what you have up at the... Is a new septic system that you're putting, is it an organic septic system, or is it a drain field?
It's a drain field. It's an organic drain field system. The part that remains is building our new drain field.
Since there doesn't seem to be any swing space, should the expectation be that the living capacity in the village will fluctuate and drop during remodels?
Our remodels are all in the wintertime.
Okay.
So we don't expect to lose summer beds.
The other thing that I think is important with that is that Christopher is sharing sort of the result after a lot of discussion. And it truly does flow in the way that we've been talking, is that the highest priority was program. And we did come to the conclusion that we were not trying to create more beds to bring more people here. But in order to make more space for program, we wound up backing up to Chalet 2 to make up for the beds that are up here so that we would at least sort of maintain at about the same level, because it was strongly felt that the programmatic needs were the highest needs. And so it's kind of important to make sure we keep it in that order. Let's make sure Molly gets in here and then...
The piece that I'm talking about is the establishment of an endowment to benefit Holden Village over perpetuity, ideally. The Holden Village Foundation, there's actually a foundation that was created by the board about 5 or 6 years ago, actually received its first money 2 or 3 years ago. So it was in effect before it actually had money in it. Those gifts have continued to go to the foundation without a lot of solicitation or action on our part. It's currently at about $330,000 in both the foundation and other planned and endowed gifts that we're aware of. And as part of the campaign, we are looking at increasing both the size of the endowment that we have, but also probably more importantly, awareness of it. That there are vehicles for people to make planned gifts, to give funds that will have a lasting effect for the village. And so this endowment goal is to raise it to about $2 million over the next 4 to 5 years. If the endowment generates 5% income, it's invested through the ELCA Foundation in socially responsible funds. 5% may be a low figure. In some years, it's a high figure. In some years, it can be negative. Mm-hmm. But at 5%, $2 million would generate $100,000 for the village to go towards additional programming and outreach, such as Janet talked about, that would support those kinds of things above and beyond what we currently are able to finance. Ultimately, our goal, at least what we've discussed, is to create an endowment of $10 million, which would generate at 5%, $500,000 a year. That's very much in the dream stage at this point, and whether that's the right goal to have or not is part of what we'll be talking about. One question that I hear often is, why did Holden Village create an endowment option for givers? Part of it is that people who have supported the village over their lifetimes want to be able to leave a legacy that will continue to provide that support in the years ahead. It also, from our point of view, does provide funds in those lean years. If registration income is down or other giving is down, endowment funds can be used to help provide some of that missing support. And finally, and I think very importantly, it enables givers to endow specific programs or to give large sums of money without us feeling that, you know, we need to somehow incorporate that large gift all into this year's budget or this year's programming. And we can take that gift and have it generate an ongoing impact on our programming and outreach without it being dumped into a single year. I do struggle, and I think many people do, with how the endowment principle fits in with some of the teachings this week about hoarding manna. There's a little bit of that flavor to it. And I think for that reason, some people who may give to Holden will specifically not give to an endowment or to a foundation, while others feel that that element of stewardship and legacy is very important to their gifts. So it simply gives the supporters of Holden Village an option as to how they might make their gifts. Should we ultimately limit the amount that is in the endowment? That's been another good question I've heard that I think should be discussed. Is $10 million too much? In current terms, if $10 million generates $500,000, our current budget includes $1 million in guest registration and other guest income. Volunteer labor is about $500,000. Actually, that's what the audit lets us report, is about $500,000. It's more like $1.3 million when I take all of the volunteer labor, all of the staff, short-term, long-term, the above and beyond the stipend amount. The value of our volunteers is staggering and is, as Diane has found out, very impressive to other institutions and grant makers who find out that we have this level of volunteerism in this age. They're very impressed with that. But there's over $1 million that Holden doesn't have to spend in order to staff and support our operations. And then about $500,000 last year in donations, both operating and capital donations. So $500,000 is a lot, but compared to what's already in our budget and being utilized by the village to support our operations, it would only be a piece of it if something catastrophic were to occur. So that's part of the consideration for an endowment. Within the endowment giving, things that we would look towards as forms of gifts, we've developed a plan giving policy to allow donors to make their gifts in the form that's most workable, comfortable, and feasible for them. Outright bequests, obviously, through a will, and life insurance, but also a wide variety of charitable trusts with various arrangements, including the continued use of that income until death, either by the person making the gift or by us, vice versa, having the income used during life, and then we receive the assets after death. There's all types of charitable trusts available depending on what suits the donor's needs. And Ann Cassidy, who is now working with the village, has put together an excellent plan for how to address these gifts, how to make sure they're the right fit both for the person making the gift and for the village. So I'm excited in that way, at least, with the endowment, that it represents a well-thought-out plan on the part of the village as to how to handle the money that the people may be wanting to give in a beneficial way for everybody.
Well, they stole my thunder because what I was planning to say was, how are we going to invite more people who can't afford to come to this place? And how are we going to develop more resources? And how are we going to build all these things? And how are we going to build the endowment? And then I would say, we're going to have a campaign. But it seems to be leaking out everywhere. It actually isn't out yet. We're sort of getting a sneak preview. The campaign is going to be announced next Friday night at the anniversary celebration as our board arrives, and it will be the just kind of the launching, the kickoff. And I know you're not supposed to kick off campaigns unless you've already got a whole lot of money already committed. But our hope is that over the course of the board meeting, we're aiming that the leadership, meaning our board, the steering committee of the campaign, and four of us sitting right here, will somehow together come up with $500,000. Now, believe me, our board is made up of folks just like you. So it will be an incredible stretch to think about that kind of support over the next 5 years. I do think that we did, because of all of you making such a huge investment, I am sure that when we do our annual report next year because of work camp, the value of our volunteer time is going to be huge in relationship to the figure we already have. I encourage you to look on the kiosk where the annual report from last year is, and the very beginning of materials. I hate to say, but only the four of us have gotten these brochures, and I wanted to put them up on the kiosk, so I was going to take them back from them in order to be able to put one front and back on the kiosk. But if you want to look very much at what we've been talking about, but at an outline of the budget for the campaign or any of the specifics, it is on the kiosk, as well as one brochure describing the planned giving. Two brochures. We will be having more of these available after the campaign announcement, and we'll be sending you a letter basically letting you know how close we got to that $500,000 goal next week, and other information about the beginning of the campaign. The overall goal is, I think, a scary figure. It's an overall goal of $6.3 million. And I think I had dinner at one. We had a very elegant special dinner during the winter, the kind of thing we get to do when you're going a little bit stir-crazy and to create your own fun around here when it's many feet of snow. And my table began saying, don't you think all that money's going to ruin Holden? You know, will we lose our sense of trust in God? And that wound up provoking a really good discussion, because as Molly was just pointing out, the amount we're trying to raise over a period of time, with the exception of the endowment, is very similar to the amount of money that we are currently using. The $200,000 a year that underwrites our program, the approximate $300,000 that underwrites our capital development, is about what we are currently spending. And that's the budget on which this campaign is based. What we're doing right now in terms of work camp, you know, the paint, the nails, the lumber, all of the materials that were here so you could go to work right away, that's kind of the overflow blessing of the success of our last campaign that started in 1995. With that campaign, we're completing Lodge 1, we're completing the drain field, and the sewer project. But that campaign overreached its goal and allows us really the support that we can get many, many more miles out of facility, not just facility improvement. I hope you all can tell that this work camp was not just about facility improvement. The great spirit that has been generated. I remember Kate Nicholson, the first Bible study Monday morning, seeing everybody. Oh, there you are, Kate. What did you say?
Oh, I can't even remember.
Well, you were. Saying something to the effect, this is just like it was in the beginning.
This, yes. The feeling of the village just was something like, this is the way it used to be. This is the community that included everybody was going the same direction, kind of had the same vision. And it's just an amazing kind of feeling.
And our hope is that that is the renewal of that forerunner spirit, that this is a beginning. Beginning always again in terms of this deep, deep commitment to our mission. I did have a conversation with Dan Erlander about this very topic that Molly was mentioning. We're talking about being men of people, and especially the other morning when we had the couple arguing about, well, a king. We don't want a king at the DC. We want an endowment. We don't want an endowment. With some conversation running along the same line. And so I asked Dan if we could go for a walk and have a long conversation, sort of theologically, about a man of attitude alongside of being good stewards of this gift. And Dan, in fact, I was going to bring, I had a big nose and a mustache and some glasses that I was going to wear so I could, you know, be Dan Erlander for a minute. Because Dan turned to me and he said, oh my, my, aren't we being a little too perfect? This sounds an awful lot like trying to be pure people instead of people of grace. He said, an endowment is just an opportunity for a grateful people to extend their thankfulness into the future. But it's about release of gifts and the handing on of gifts. And he pointed out that a lot of the concern about when we get too legalistic about, you know, whether or not having a plan, raising money in a way that is an investment in this place, is it's always a both and. It's not an either or in terms of it's great to have the people that question whether or not this is somehow threatening the sense that all gifts are from God, and raising those questions, and let's hope those voices are allowed long into our future alongside of our desire to be good stewards of creation, including this place, with our desire that our children, not just meaning our biological children, but the people of the future, will be able to receive the blessings that we have each received here. And so we need both of those voices calling us to the right attitude about how we go about doing these things. I think he had several other things to say about wisdom. Wisdom is not hoarding. I don't think I'll go into more detail because we want to make sure that we hear a little bit from you. I think all of us struggle personally. Everybody with a retirement plan in this room, you know, has struggled with how much is too much, you know, and how to maintain generosity as income gets smaller and so on. So these are things we wrestle with personally as well as institutionally. And thank God for the voice here that calls us to the wilderness school to maintain that attitude. But it is an attitude that looks to the future. And that promised land, whatever the sense that we are looking to the future of God's promise, is what we hope all of this is all about. So let's take some questions.
Is there a minimum in the endowment before you could ever draw on the interest?
No. We have actually been receiving some of the income from it based on the gifts that had gone in and their request that that money be used for fundraising until last year when the stock markets began to fail us and we discontinued withdrawing funds from it until that principal builds back up. So we have the ability to request those withdrawals even now.
And that's, is there a separate board for this or what?
Currently it's the same board as the Holden Village board.
Yes.
I was mentioning to someone the other day, we have these little forms that Lutheran Brotherhood matches, $25 to $100, and she'd never heard about it. And I'm wondering, now that Brotherhood and AAL01, is that going to continue? And couldn't these forms be more publicly around so people would know that's available?
Yeah. Oh, I just got a letter that you haven't seen yet. That is a big question. One of the things that we've persisted in since we the last couple of years is trying to see if AAL would do what Lutheran Brotherhood does, because many of our donors have asked, do we prefer Lutheran Brotherhood for some reason? Because we have included the Lutheran Brotherhood brochure in our materials in the past, and we always have a little line on our donor cards that says Lutheran Brotherhood number. But people still send us AAL, and we try to send them into AAL, and AAL has responded, we only fund educational institutions. We try to say, but we are an educational institution, but we are categorically under outdoor ministries within the usual framework of the church. So the question is, now that they are one organization, will AAL, our hope would be that they would adopt similar policies. I just got a letter yesterday indicating They basically are maintaining until the end of this year the Lutheran Brotherhood commitment. They are not making AAL available, and they are not making a commitment for the future. They are basically saying that they are under review, that they caution us not to put a request for matching numbers in any materials that we would have after this year. So I encourage those of you that have got either of those policies to write to them with your hope that they will continue to be generous in matching the desires of their own constituency.
Maybe I'm not being observant. I've always just gone to Lutheran Brotherhood and asked for the form from there. I've not noticed it on giving the information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a line on our donor form, and then I think it was a year ago
we sent
with the Clinton appeal, we sent out the simply giving information for the...
You mean whenever you send out requests for money, this is there?
On the cards, yes.
Yeah. We don't send out the matching forms, but the card has a place to indicate that you're a Lutheran Brotherhood member so that we can pursue the matching.
But when do you get this card? That's what I'm asking.
With the appeals?
Pardon?
With any of the appeals that go out?
I guess we just ignored it.
The people at our table didn't seem to be aware of the possibility.
Okay. Well, we need to lift that up.
Could I comment on it? I'm a second level volunteer with AAL, and hopefully you'll be a second level volunteer with the new Thrayman. Two things. One is that I would encourage everybody who's a Lutheran Brotherhood person this year is to take advantage of those matching funds, because they will honor that till the end of the year. The second thing is that they've told us that in combining the two organizations, they would take the best of both of them. And I know that outdoor ministry is one of the things that's been with Lutheran Brotherhood. And I find there's a mixture of both AAL and Lutheran Brotherhood people who is in the new leadership, both in the field and in the office.
Well, we're still hoping.
Well, and I think that they will listen to the members. And so I think you're right as far as letting the agents know and letting various different people know in the home office what you want. And they're birthing it right now, as more of the new fraternal. And this would be a good time to write.
You attempted to project kind of the demographics of the guests and staff. You know, originally, this was going to be a camp for basically young adults. It's kind of changed from that. Has anyone looked to see if it's going to be younger people, older people, a mixture in between?
Maybe in terms of our goals, anyway.
Well, I think our goals are going to be to remain being similar to what we've been, a retreat center for families and adults. But that our programming will serve young people, maybe perhaps more than it has been, but that we won't become a camp for kids or for youth, but that we will continue to serve. We haven't looked at the demographics of numbers and baby boomers getting older and that sort of stuff, but our plans remain to be for families and adults, but that there'll be programming for all of that. Sure, if I'm answering what you want to hear.
Janet, earlier you mentioned about diversity, getting more diversity in here. How do you define, how's Holden defining diversity? Is it race or nationality or belief or economics? And then how are we going to become more diverse?
We're working on that sort of stuff all the time. It's very challenging. I think our... And we're also working on that definition of what that means for us. I think what we want to do is be reflective of the church and also at the same time challenge our church to be more inclusive. And so I think when you said economic, I think that's one of the areas that we basically are starting with. Communities of people who economically cannot afford to come. We also are trying to look at communities that are local, and can transportation is easier for them to get here. So one of the communities that we are looking at are the Hispanic community that serves this area, this part of the state. We've been working with Skagit Valley, Tierra Nueva, which is a program started by Bob and Gracie Ekblad, who are frequent teachers here. And they've brought many folks with along with them to be teachers with them who are part of the farm worker community. We have one of our staff members from this past winter just received a call to do Hispanic ministry in the Yakima Valley. We're hoping that she'll be a good contact for us. And then also the African American community, we're hoping to make some connections in, especially in through this the spring, through this connection in Tacoma, the Hilltop area. Is there any more? Economic, race.
Well, and also disabilities. Some of those ADA improvements that we're making is to help it become more accessible.
Some of the groups that have come have included people who have disabilities. In fact, actually, we probably will have six groups this summer instead of five. There's a large community that will be coming this summer that we're working with to see how we can support them to come too. So, but there's lots of work to be done with that.
I have a question. I'm excited to hear about Shelley too. I have no idea. And I guess one of the reasons I'm most excited, and I hope it's not too late, is the possibility of getting single rooms. Maybe the whole Shelley can be single rooms. Because I do think
they all bathrooms.
Well, I don't need the bathrooms. And I also think demographically, more and more of our population in the United States or wherever is single adults. Who, because of Holden's room, simply the way the lodges are laid out, you couldn't do single rooms, but this is a chance to offer that as a possibility.
Well, I think that's kind of what we have in our mind. We're thinking of it probably with the staff helping, and we have moved in that direction that our long-term staff all have single rooms. But we also have just begun conversations about how to maximize the space and what will be allowable with regulations with the State Historical Preservation Organization office, those sorts of things. So we don't even know how many spaces we're going to be able to have in that space. Yes?
On the next phase of your construction plans, when will that start?
When are we going to start our next remodels? Mm-hmm. September. Lodge 6 and Chalet 6.
We're going to pass around a little sign-up.
It's going to be a busy month. We're also replacing our diversion dam that month.
You know, the road is clear now.
That's right.
I can't stress more what I said in the beginning about the good energy in the village right now for accomplishing things. When you're either so worried about money or divided and arguing about all kinds of things, you can't move forward as much as we've been able to. And so we're on a roll. Who knows when we're going to hit something that will stop us. But
one of the things, I volunteer with Habitat for Humanity. And by doing that, I gain skills that I use at home. Yeah. And that's what I look at. It's like right now I'm here, I'm exercising. This thing called work, I call it exercise. And I look at this, it's like to me this is beautiful, that the things that I can learn from just being here, things that I have learned from being here. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful thing. It's like
it's a great place to use time and talents.
If you don't use it, you lose it. It's like as simple as that.
One of the things that has helped us move forward has been congregational work groups, where a congregation says, we'll bring our team. Our team just remodeled the fellowship hall so we know who can saw and who can do this, that, and the other thing. And one of the biggest reasons that a congregation will come as a group is, yes, it's to help us out, but it's because of what it does for the congregation.
Sure.
You know, in terms of just great spirit and energy. And so far, every one of them has wanted to come back again. So.
Yeah, there's one church group that it was adults that were jealous of the teen group that got to do all these sermon projects. So they got an adult group that does sermon projects that they bonded together and grown in there.
That happens with Habitat, too. The different churches competing against each other. Who's got the best house? We built four houses in the hilltop, and it was like this rivalry amongst the churches.
Just maybe a couple more, and then we'll let
I'm just going to comment. I'm really excited about two of the things that Christopher mentioned. We were talking the other day about the first view that we see when we come to a village is that demonstration, demolition area down there by Narnia. It would really be great to have that cleaned up. And the other thing is, any photographer knows that it would be great to have the lines and wires out of the way of the cameras. That's great. Encourage those.
I have a comment and a question. The comment is that in 1997 I created CRT, Charitable Remainder Unit Trust, for Holden Village, even though I was a Methodist and now I'm a Catholic. And this has been a tremendous tax write-off. It's coming to an end now, but it's just been really a challenge to utilize all the tax write-off that's been available for 6 years. And the question is, 2 years ago, there were tremendous mice in the walls. You could hear them.
Mm-hmm.
In night, up and down the wall. How did you ever get rid of them? I trapped them. I set 6 traps every night, and they were usually full. How did you ever get rid of them?
Well, it's a combination of many things. The population ebbs and flows. Some years are very big mouse years, and others are less so. When we remodel a building, we're able to eliminate many of the passageways that they make use of to enter the buildings. And we trap them constantly. So it's not that we've solved the problem. We're trying to solve it building by building. And for the rest of the buildings, we simply do our best to keep the populations under control.
I just have to admit to say, you've done a marvelous job. I cannot remember they coming here over the years that there haven't at least been a few mice running around. And somebody saw the list the other day and said, well, they'd never been it. They didn't even know it was there. So I was telling them all about the great fun in the lift. I said, but one of the most funs of sitting in the lift was sitting across from the stairway watching people eat popcorn with the mice sitting between their feet that they didn't know was there. And the last time Angela and I were in the village, we were in Chalet 4, and the last day, like tonight, we said, gee, we looked at each other and said, we haven't found a mouse. And with that, one came under the door, ran over both our feet, ran to the window, turned around, ran back over our feet. Not one.
I think it's a big year. Out in the open, those mice become bird food. Hawks and,
right.
You know, you have to look at where you're living at, you know.
Their home.
This is good of videotape on nature. And you'll,
yeah, well, they were great entertainment.
Go ahead.
The other thing I wanted to say was thank you to the four of you for just the vision that has made this week possible. I don't know what I can say. It's just been a real opportunity. To be part of the community. I've wanted to for so many years, and this is just so great.
Thank you. I don't think you could say better that work camp is far more than facility improvement. I think we'll stick around if people have individual questions. There hasn't been anybody who's thrown tomatoes or who has said, this is going to ruin Holden Village. But certainly, if any of you have concerns about that, please talk to us. Like I said, we need the manna reminders always, even as we try to, you know, go forward with good courage and trying to do what is best for our mission. If you can please convey as... You're on the ground floor here of being available as you talk with other people who will say, what is going on at Holden? Aren't they getting high and mighty trying to raise all this money? If you can please assure them that we, you know, are not, you know, getting air conditioning in the rooms. And as some people say, fine, they're getting rid of the captain's chairs. We guarantee the captain's chairs will still be here today. We're not talking about poshiness. We hopefully are talking about good stewardship, planful stewardship of this wonderful place. So thank you for your support, and to the extent that you can be, please be ambassadors for this message. And stick around and talk to us if anybody has some more questions. Thank you.
Thank you.